Chapter 30. Chimney Nook could have caught from down the flue the beat of a man's footstep along the highway without. But it was in that footfall, for which as he had been waiting, that the origin of Caroline's involuntary springing lay. The pedestrian was Ma Balamur, as the girl well knew, but his business that way was not to visit her. He sought another woman whom he spoke of as his intended, and who lived at Morford, 2 miles farther on. On one, and only one, occasion did it happen that Caroline could not control her utterance. It was when her sister alone chanced to be present. "Oh, oh, oh!" apostrophe she cried. "He's going to her, and not coming to me." Apostrophe, apostrophe, to do the fiddler justice, he had not at first thought greatly of, or spoken much to, this girl of impressionable mold. But he had soon found out her secret, and could not resist a little by play with her too easily hurt heart, as an interlude between his more serious performances at Morford. The two became well acquainted, though only by stealth, hardly a soul in Stickleford except her sister, and her lover Ned Hipcroft, being aware of the attachment. Her father disapproved of her coldness to Ned. Her sister, too, hoped she might get over this nervous passion for a man, of whom so little was known. The ultimate result was that Caroline's manly and simple wooer Edward found his suit becoming practically hopeless. He was a respectable mechanic, in a far sounder position than Mop the nominal horse doctor. But when, before leaving her, Ned put his flat and final question, would she marry him, then and there, now or never, it was with little expectation of obtaining more than the negative she gave him. Though her father supported him, and her sister supported him, he could not play the fiddle so, as to draw your soul out of your body like a spider's thread, as Mop did, till you felt as limp as wily wind, and yearned for something to cling to. Indeed, Hipcroft had not the slightest ear for music, could not sing 2 notes in tune, much less play them. The no he had expected, and got from her, in spite of a preliminary encouragement, gave Ned a new start in life. It had been uttered in such a tone of sad entreaty, that he resolved to persecute her no more. She should not even be distressed by a sight of his form in the distant perspective of the street and lane. He left the place, and his natural course was to London. The railway to South Wessex was in process of construction, but it was not as yet opened for traffic, and Hipcroft reached the capital by a 6 days' trudge on foot, as many a better man had done before him. He was one of the last of the artisan class who used that now extinct method of travel to the great centers of labor, so customary then from time immemorial. In London he lived and worked regularly at his trade. More fortunate than many, his disinterested willingness recommended him from the first. During the ensuing 4 years he was never out of employment. He neither advanced nor receded in the modern sense. He improved as a workman, but he did not shift one jot in social position. About his love for Caroline he maintained a rigid silence. No doubt he often thought of her. But being always occupied, and having no relations at Stickleford, he held no communication with that part of the country, and showed no desire to return. In his quiet lodging in Lambeth he moved about after working hours with the facility of a woman, doing his own cooking, attending to his stocking heels, and shaping himself by degrees to a lifelong bachelorhood. For this conduct one is bound, to advance the canonical reason, that time could not efface from his heart the image of little Caroline spent, and it may be in part true, but there was also the inference, that his was a nature not greatly dependent upon the ministrations of the other sex for its comforts. The 4th year of his residence as a mechanic in London was the year of the Hyde Park exhibition already mentioned, and at the construction of this huge glass house, then unexampled in the world's history, he worked daily. It was an era of great hope and activity among the nations and industries. Though Hipcroft was, in his small way, a central man in the movement, he plodded on with his usual outward placidity. Yet for him too, the year was destined to have its surprises, For when the bustle of getting the building ready for the opening day was past, the ceremonies had been witnessed, and people were flocking thither from all parts of the globe, he received a letter from Caroline. Till that day the silence of 4 years between himself and Stickleford had never been broken. She informed her old lover, in an uncertain penmanship which suggested a trembling hand, of the troubles he had been put to in ascertaining his address, and then broached the subject which had prompted her to write. 4 years ago, she said with the greatest delicacy of which she was capable, as he had been so foolish as to refuse him. Her willful wrong-headedness had since been a grief to her many times, and of late particularly. As for Mr. Alamour, he had been absent almost as long as Ned, she did not know where. She would gladly marry Ned now, if he were to ask her again, and be a tender little wife to him till her life's end. A tide of warm feeling must have surged through Ned Hipcroft's frame on receipt of this news, if we may judge by the issue. Unquestionably he loved her still, even if not to the exclusion of every other happiness. This from his Caroline, she who had been dead to him these many years, alive to him again as of old, was in itself a pleasant, gratifying thing. Ned had grown so resigned to, or satisfied with, his lonely lot, that he probably would not have shown much jubilation at anything. Still, a certain ardor of preoccupation, after his first surprise, revealed how deeply her confession of faith in him had stirred him. Measured and methodical in his ways, he did not answer the letter that day, nor the next, nor the next. He was having a good thing. Apostrophe when he did answer it, there was a great deal of sound reasoning mixed in with the unmistakable tenderness of his reply, but the tenderness itself was sufficient to reveal that he was pleased with her straightforward frankness, that the anchorages he had once obtained in his heart was renewable, if it had not been continuously firm. He told her, and as he wrote his lips twitched humorously over the few gentle words of raillery he indented among the rest of his sentences, that it was all very well for her to come round at this time of day. Why wouldn't she have him when he wanted her? As he had no doubt learned that he was not married, but suppose his affections had since been fixed on another? She ought to beg his pardon. Still, he was not the man to forget her. But considering how he had been used, and what he had suffered, she could not quite expect him to go down to Stickleford and fetch her. But if she would come to him, and say she was sorry, as was only fair, why, yes, he would marry her, knowing what a good little woman she was at the core. He added that the request for her to come to him was a less one to make than it would have been when he first left Stickleford, or even a few months ago, for the new railway into South Wessex was now open, and there had just begun to be run wonderfully contrived special trains, called excursion trains, on account of the great exhibition, so that she could come up easily alone. She said in her reply how good it was of him to treat her so generously, after her hot and cold treatment of him, that though she felt frightened at the magnitude of the journey, and was never as yet in a railway train, having only seen one pass at a distance, she embraced his offer with all her heart, and would, indeed, own to him how sorry she was, and beg his pardon, and try to be a good wife always, and make up for lost time. The remaining details of when and where were soon settled, Caroline informing him, for her ready identification in the crowd, that she would be wearing my new sprigged laylock cotton gown, apostrophe and Ned gaily responding that, having married her the morning after her arrival, he would make a day of it, by taking her to the exhibition. One early summer afternoon, accordingly, he came from his place of work, and hastened towards Waterloo Station to meet her. It was as wet and chilly as an English June day can occasionally be, but as he waited on the platform in the drizzle he glowed inwardly, and seemed to have something to live for again. The excursion train, an absolutely new departure in the history of travel, was still a novelty on the Wessex line, and probably everywhere. Crowds of people had flocked to all the stations on the way up to witness the unwonted sight of so long a train's passage, even where they did not take advantage of the opportunity it offered. The seats for the humbler class of travelers in these early experiments in steam locomotion were open trucks, without any protection whatever from the wind and rain, and damp weather having set in with the afternoon. The unfortunate occupants of these vehicles were, on the train drawing up at the London terminus, found to be in a pitiable condition from their long journey, blue-faced, stiff-necked, sneezing, rain-beaten, chilled to the marrow, many of the men being hatless. In fact, they resembled people who had been out all night in an open boat on a rough sea, rather than inland excursionists for pleasure. The women had in some degree protected themselves by turning up the skirts of their gowns over their heads, but as by this arrangement they were additionally exposed about the hips, they were all more or less in a sorry plight. In the bustle and crush of alighting forms of both sexes which followed the entry of the huge concatenation into the station, Ned Hipcroft soon discerned the slim little figure his eye was in search of, in the sprigged lilac, as described. She came up to him with a frightened smile, still pretty, though so damp, weather-beaten, and shivering from long exposure to the wind. "Oh, Ned!" she sputtered. He clasped her in his arms and kissed her, whereupon she burst into a flood of tears. "You are wet, my poor dear. I hope you will not get cold," he said. And surveying her, and her multifarious surrounding packages, he noticed that by the hand she led a toddling child, a little girl of 3 or so whose hood was as clammy, and tender face as blue as those of the other travelers. "Who is this somebody you know?" asked Ned curiously. "Yes, Ned. She's mine." "Yours?" "Yes, my own." "Your own child?" "Yes." "Well, as God's in Ned, I didn't name it in my letter, because, you see, it would have been so hard to explain. I thought that when we met I could tell you how she happened to be born, so much better than in writing. I hope you'll excuse it this once, dear Ned, and not scold me, now I've come so many, many miles. This means Mr. Mobolamour, I reckon." said Hipcroft, gazing palely at them from the distance of the yard or two to which he had withdrawn with a start. Caroline gasped. "But he's been gone away for years," she supplicated. "And I never had a young man before. And I was so unlucky to be catched the first time, though some of the girls down there go on like anything." Ned remained in silence, pondering. "You'll forgive me, dear Ned?" she added, beginning to sob outright. "I haven't taken Ian after all, because you can pack us back again, if you want to, though 'tis hundreds o' miles, and so wet, and night a coming on, and I with no money. What the devil can I do?" Hipcroft groaned. A more pitiable picture than the pair of helpless creatures presented was never seen on a rainy day, as they stood on the great, gaunt, puddled platform, a whiff of drizzle blowing under the roof upon them now and then. The pretty attire in which they had started from Stickleford in the early morning bemuddled and sodden, weariness on their faces, and fear of him in their eyes. For the child began to look as if she thought she too had done some wrong, remaining in an appalled silence till the tears rolled down her chubby cheeks. "What's the matter, my little maid?" said Ned mechanically. "I do want to go home." She let out, in tones that told of a bursting heart. "And my toddies be cold, and I shan't have no bread and butter no more. I don't know what to say to it all." declared Ned, his own eye moist as he turned and walked a few steps with his head down, then regarded them again point blank. from the child escaped troubled breaths and silently welling tears. Want some bread and butter, do ye? ' he said, with factitious hardness. Yes. Well, I dare say I can get ye a bit. Naturally, you must want some. And you too, for that matter, Caroline. I do feel a little hungered. But I can keep it off, she murmured. Folk shouldn't do that, he said gruffly. There, come along. He caught up the child, as he added, you must bide here tonight, anyhow, I suppose. What can you do otherwise? I'll get ye some tea and victuals, and as for this job, I'm sure I don't know what to say. This is the way out. They pursued their way, without speaking, to Ned's lodgings, which were not far off. There he dried them, and made them comfortable, and prepared tea. They thankfully sat down. The ready-made household of which he suddenly found himself the head imparted a cozy aspect to his room, and a paternal one to himself. Presently he turned to the child, and kissed her now blooming cheeks, and, looking wistfully at Caroline, kissed her also. I don't see how I can send ye back all the miles, he growled. Now you've come all the way o' purpose to join me. But you must trust me, Caroline, and show you real faith in me. Well, do you feel better now, my little woman? The child nodded, her mouth being otherwise occupied. I did trust you, Ned, in coming, and I shall always. Thus, without any definite agreement to forgive her, he tacitly acquiesced in the fate that heaven had sent him, and on the day of their marriage, which was not quite so soon as he had expected it could be, on account of the time necessary for banns, he took her to the exhibition, when they came back from church, as he had promised. While standing near a large mirror in one of the courts devoted to furniture, Caroline started, for in the glass appeared the reflection of a form exactly resembling Ma Bollamore so exactly, that it seemed impossible to believe anybody but that artist in person to be the original. On passing round the objects which hemmed in Ned, her, and the child from a direct view, no Ma was to be seen. Whether he were really in London or not at that time was never known. And Caroline always stoutly denied that her readiness to go and meet Ned in town arose from any rumor that Mop had also gone thither, which denial there was no reasonable ground for doubting. And then the year glided away, and the exhibition folded itself up and became a thing of the past. The park trees that had been enclosed for 6 months were again exposed to the winds and storms, and the sod grew green anew. Ned found that Caroline resolved herself into a very good wife and companion, though as he had made herself, what is called cheap to him, but in that she was like another domestic article, a cheap teapot, which often brews better tea than a dear one. One autumn Hipcroft found himself with, but little work to do, and a prospect of less for the winter. Both being country born and bred, they fancied they would like to live again in their natural atmosphere. It was accordingly decided between them that they should leave the pent-up London lodging, and that Ned should seek out employment near his native place, his wife and her daughter staying with Caroline's father during the search for occupation, and an abode of their own. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.